Genesis chapter 30, and last week, if you remember, we finished up with verse number 24. I kind of breezed through chapter number 30, verses 1 through 24. We were looking at Jacob's home problems, I guess we could say. Jacob had, of course, we've been looking at him for several weeks now. He had tricked his brother, then he tricked his dad, then he left his father on false pretenses. He was sent away under the guise that he was going to look for a wife, when in reality he was just afraid of his brother because his brother said he's going to kill him for tricking him. And so his father sent him away to look for a wife. He had a little run-in with God as he was on his way, and he had the vision of the ladder that went from the ground all the way up into the heavens. We looked at that. And then last week we saw that he got to Haran, to where he was traveling to his father's family, Laban and all of them. And as soon as he reaches there, he comes in contact with one of his cousins, Rachel, which happens to be available. She happens to be, I guess, in the right age range. Everything fits right together. And it just so happens they met at the right time, at the right place. And he decided he liked her. He went home with her and spent some time with her and her family, Laban, just like he was supposed to be doing. And in all of that, he made a deal. He struck a deal with his uncle Laban to marry Laban's daughter, Rachel. He said, I'll work for you 7 years. And then after the 7 years, since, you know, he didn't come carrying anything, he didn't have any kind of a dowry to pay, he said, the 7 years labor will be my dowry. And after that, I'll marry your daughter and I'll live happily ever after. That was the plan. So he works the 7 years. It says that it seemed just as a short time because of the love that he had for her. And at the end of 7 years, he said, it's time for me to have my wife. And so Laban says, all right, throws the marriage celebration. And now the one who was always tricking others gets tricked himself. And it's honestly, it's a doozy because he's tricked into marrying the wrong woman. And we talked about that a little bit last week and how that could have been possible. I'm honestly going on the assumption that more than likely he had to get drunk. I mean, that's the only way I can find that you could marry the wrong woman. But anyway, we won't stay there very long. We looked at that a little bit last week. And so anyway, he married the wrong woman, woke up the next morning and realized the face that was looking at him wasn't the face he had intended to be looking at. And so he went to Laban and said, you have cheated me. And Laban says, well, you know, it's our custom that the firstborn, and those words would slap him upside the face because he was the one who cheated his brother, the firstborn, out of his birthright and out of his blessing. And so Laban said, the firstborn is the one that has to be married first. And so you married the firstborn. But hey, I'll cut you a deal. If you'll work for me another 7 years, you can have the secondborn. You can have Rachel like you wanted. And so really, he's got him backed into a corner. There's nothing more he can do. And so he agrees. Because once he's married, there's no way of getting out of it. He's got the wrong one, so he works 7 more years for Rachel. Of course, Laban does cut him a little bit of a deal here that he doesn't have to wait the 7 years to actually receive her. He says, wait 7 days, then you get her, and then work 7 more years. Okay, so he does all that. And that kind of brings us to where we're at now. After he works these 7 years, he's ready to move onward. He's ready to go back home because he's been enriching Laban all this time, but hasn't been enriching himself any, except for in children. Because in the part here that we kind of skipped over in chapter 30, we've looked at it a little bit, but the two wives, and I said last week, polygamy is always a recipe for disaster, never was God's plan. And so the two wives were constantly in conflict with one another. It was a competition in Jacob's house. And so Jacob loved Rachel, not so much Leah. He was tricked into her. And so Rachel wasn't able to have children, but Leah was. And so Leah felt as if she had the upper hand because she could have children, but Rachel had his heart. And so you can imagine the turmoil in Jacob's house during that time. And so Rachel had the bright idea and said, okay, if I can't bear you children, here's my handmaid. This is culturally acceptable, perfectly within what's right and wrong in our society. Marry my servant girl here. Have children with her, and I will claim them as my own, since she's my servant. And so does that, has children with her. Leah by now has quit having children. She says, well, I can't have any more children, so have my servant girl as well. And next thing you know, Jacob has four wives. Sounds like a mess, doesn't it? We have TV shows back in the States that deals with this kind of stuff. But anyway. So anyway, ended up with four wives, and those four wives, between all of them, had a total of 12 children, 11 sons and a daughter. There may have been more daughters. I don't know. It didn't record any more than that. And so this is where Jacob's at. He's got his four wives. He's got his 12 children. And that's all he's got, because all this time he has been working to pay for these wives. All of his efforts and all of his work has been going to pay off this debt that he had to Laban. So at this time, Jacob would have been probably close to 100 years old. Okay, you figure up the math on it. He would have been close to 100 years old. And yeah, he's got the children, but he doesn't have anything as far as his own household built up. He doesn't have an inheritance for his children. He doesn't have anything to pass onward to them. So he goes to Laban and he says, it's time for me to leave. It's time for me to go so I can actually treasure up an inheritance for my own children. I can build my own fortune, my own household, because all this time I've been building your household. And so that's where we pick up here in verse number 25. It says, and it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said unto Laban, send me away that I may go into mine own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served thee, and let me go, for thou knowest my service which I have served thee, for which I have done thee. And Laban said unto him, I pray thee, if I have found favor in thine eyes, tarry, for I have learned by experience that the Lord hath blessed me for thy sake. And he said, appoint me thy wages, and I will give it. And he said unto him, thou knowest how I have served thee, and how thy cattle was with me. For it was little which thou hadst before I came, and it is now increased unto a multitude. And the Lord hath blessed thee since my coming. And now, when shall I provide for my own house also? And he said, what shall I give thee? And Jacob said, thou shalt not give me anything. If thou wilt do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep thy flock. I will pass through all thy flock today, removing from thence all the speckled and spotted cattle, and all the brown cattle among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and of such shall be my hire. So shall my righteousness answer for me in time to come, when it shall come for my hire before thy face. Everyone that is not speckled or spotted among the goats and brown among the sheep, that shall be counted stolen with me. And Laban said, behold, I would it might be according to thy word. Okay, so far we had a plan for the wives, now we got a plan for the wealth, right? He said, whenever I come to you, Laban, you had nothing. You had very little whenever I first came to you. And now it's increased exponentially, is increased to a great multitude that you have now. And so you know, and he just admitted in verse 27, said, I have learned by experience that the Lord hath blessed me for thy sake. That's what Laban told Jacob. He was looking at Jacob, you're my good luck charm. You're the one who's responsible for my flocks, my herds being blessed and bringing forth in abundance. And so he says, I'm not willing to let you go yet. Although you're wanting to go, although you have a desire to go, and you want to go back to Canaan, you want to take your family back, I want to keep you around a little bit longer. What's it going to take for me to keep you here? And now I will say, whether it was a mistake or not for him to stay, I'm not sure. Okay? I'll just say that up front. But God had already given him a desire to go back, and I believe part of the reason he was wanting to go back to Canaan as well, not only had he done his time, so to speak, but it specifically says in verse 25, and it came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said unto Laban. It seemed like there was something about that child being born, something about that time frame, that he was ready now to go back home to where he came from. Okay? Seems like that was an important step there. And I believe part of it was that he is realizing as his children are getting older, because realize at this time he had been married for 7 years to Rachel and to Rebecca. Or Rachel and Rebecca was his mom, sorry. Rachel and to Leah. And so if Leah would have got pregnant right off the bat, his oldest child would be around six and a half years old. Right? And so he's looking at his oldest child. He's looking around at the land that he lives in. He's looking at Laban and the way that Laban lives, the way that Laban conducts his life. He's looking at Laban's children and grandchildren. He's looking at all the influences around him. And he says, it's about time for me to go back to Canaan. Because he's looking at the pagan land in which he's living in. And so he says, if I'm going to raise this family, and if I'm going to have this blessing, if I'm going to carry on the Abrahamic covenant that's been passed down to me, I need to be around God's people. I need to raise these children up in God's presence with God's people. Okay, I believe this was a factor. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I believe it was a factor. And so he had a desire to go back to Canaan. But whenever Laban says, I have seen that God has blessed me for your sake, name your price. That's a big temptation, is it not? I mean, whenever he looks at you and says, you are extremely valuable to me, name your price, I'll pay it, whatever it is. Huge temptation. And so it may be, I'm speculating now, okay? It may be that Jacob should have left then. Okay? Maybe not. God did bless him while he was there. But anyway, it does cause him some problems as well. But this would have been a huge temptation. And so Laban tells him here, appoint me thy wages, verse 28, I will give it. He basically hands him an empty check, blank check. Whatever you want, I will give it to you. And so Jacob responds in verse number 30 and says, you had little whenever I got here, now you have a multitude. You know how valuable I've been to you. So he's kind of laying the groundwork here for what he's getting ready to ask for. And so anyway, as he goes down through this, verse 31, Laban asked him, what shall I give thee? You've laid the groundwork. You've said how valuable and that you know how valuable you are to me and how much you have increased my wealth and my goods. So what is it you're asking for? So Laban's probably expecting some exorbitant amount, a huge number, and he was probably willing to pay it. But what Jacob comes back with is he says, I don't want you to give me anything. He says, I'm going to go ahead and I'll keep your flock again. And here's what we'll do. And I'll just kind of give an overview of what he gives out here, because it's a little hard to follow. But he says, in your flocks, with the sheep, you have pure white sheep. You've got brown sheep, right? We've seen those around. You got the black sheep, white sheep. Amongst the goats, you have the solid colored ones, and then you have the speckled and spotted ones. And in that economy, the white sheep and the solid colored goats were the ones that were the most valuable and sought after of all of them. And so the black sheep and the speckled and spotted goats were not worth as much because they were used for clothing, garments, and all that kind of stuff. And so they wanted a solid collar. And so also those speckled and spotted and those black sheep were more rare. You drive down the motorways here and you look at the sheep, and the brown or black sheep are much more rare than the white ones are, right? Y'all follow me on this? Yeah. And so anyway, Jacob said, here's what we'll do. I'll go through and I will separate. I will take all of the ones that are speckled and spotted, all the ones that are brown and black, out of the flocks, and I will leave the solid colored ones and the white ones here, and I will take the speckled, spotted, and black ones and put them over here. And then whatever comes out of them that are speckled and spotted or black, those will be mine. And this was the plan. We find just after this that Laban goes along with the plan. And I think that Laban thought it was his lucky day. And he thought that Jacob was a fool. Because you got to realize what Jacob just proposed, really the deck was stacked against him. He was proposing a really bad deal. Because he was taking what was less valuable from Laban's flock, and also the ones that were less likely to be produced. The ones that Jacob were claiming for his own were the ones that were rare and the ones that were of less value. And Laban's in there scratching his head and saying, you just said how valuable you were to me, and I just said you could have whatever you want, and then you say that you want the least produced animals that are worth the least? The inferior quality ones? That doesn't really make sense, right? So Laban says, yeah, I'll agree with that. And so that day, Laban, Jacob had said, I'll go through and I'll separate him out. Laban goes through instead and separates him out. And he takes all the speckled and all the spotted and all the black sheep out from amongst the better quality ones. And then he puts 3 days distance between them to ensure that Jacob can't crossbreed the pure ones with the speckled ones to stack the deck against him even more. And so Jacob's over here tending his valuable herd, the ones that are the purebred, so to speak. And he takes the other ones and sends with Laban's sons. Okay? This is what's going on. And so what Laban is expecting, I want to make sure I get this across. What Laban is expecting is for Jacob just to get the stray or the rare occasional offspring. That's what he's expecting. You know, you think, white sheep, white sheep, white sheep. Not white sheep, black sheep, right? Solid black goat, solid black goat, solid black goat. Not solid black, stripe. Now, of course, they didn't have a lot of biology going on. They didn't know a whole lot about genetics and recessive and dominant and things, traits and all that kind of thing. But this is the plan that Laban had in his mind, that Jacob is not going to get very much. And what he does get is going to be inferior quality. And so Jacob had kind of laid the gauntlet, so to speak, here for Laban. And honestly, he was putting God to the test. We're going to find out later on in chapter 31 that God had actually revealed this to him. We're going to find out that he says, God showed me what to ask Laban for. And then he trusted God enough to ask Laban for it, even though all odds were against him. He took the deal that made no sense. And oftentimes God requires the same thing of us. A lot of times the things that God asks of us doesn't really make sense. That's where faith comes in, right? And so anyway, Laban takes him up on this offer here. And making sure I'm not skipping over anything because I'm not paying attention to my notes. Okay, so he accepts those terms, and Jacob is now stuck with Laban for what's going to end up being 6 more years. But I do want to point out here, I may be wrong, I've looked at this and I haven't found it yet. I don't find where he agrees on a set amount of time. All the times I've ever read it, I've just always, okay, he ended up for 6 years, so he promised 7 years for the wives, so apparently 6 years was the promise. I don't find where he actually promised a set amount of time. So the deal was, he started on day one here. From the time of this agreement, he has nothing. Laban's one flock's here, his other flock's here, and then whatever is speckled, spotted, or black that comes from them will be Jacob's. So there's no time frame to it. And so all the time that he works for him, whatever is speckled, spotted, or black is going to be Jacob's flock. And so Jacob sets out working for Laban for an undisclosed amount of time, just however long this agreement works out for them. And so in verse number 35, it says, and he, that's Laban, he removed that day the he-goats that were ring-streaked and spotted, and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, and every one that had some white in it, and all the brown among the sheep, and gave them into the hands of his sons. By the way, like I said, that's Laban that removed him. It was Laban's sons because Jacob's sons would have been 7 and under at that time. They would have been taking care of sheep. And he set 3 days' journey betwixt himself and Jacob. And Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. And Jacob took him rods of green poplar and of the hazel and chestnut tree and peeled white streaks in them and made the white appear, which was in the rods. And he set the rods which he had peeled before the flocks in the gutters in the watering troughs when the sheep came to drink, that they should conceive when they came to drink. And the flocks conceived before the rods and brought forth cattle, ring-streaked, speckled, and spotted. And Jacob did separate the lambs and set the faces of the flocks toward the ring-streaked and all the brown of the flock of Laban. And he put his own flocks by themselves and put them not unto Laban's cattle. And it came to pass, whensoever the stronger cattle did conceive that Jacob laid the rods before the eyes of the cattle in the gutters, and that they might conceive among the rods. But when the cattle were feeble, he put them not in. So the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger Jacob's. And the man increased exceedingly, and had much cattle, and maid servants, and men servants, and camels, and asses. And so, as we see here, Laban agreed with this. Jacob continued working for him, and he started building his herd. And as he was going about this, God began prospering him. For some reason, an unusually large number of the animals that were produced ended up coming up brown, speckled, and ring-streaked. Who would have thought? And Laban's sitting here, and every time a sheep pops out, how's this happening? White, brown. And he couldn't have figured it out because he had been a shepherd for a long time. But now all of a sudden, everything he knew about breeding sheep had changed because God was working for Jacob. God was bringing things about, and he was prospering Jacob in that land. God had promised him whenever he had the vision back in chapter 29, I believe it was, that he was going to be with him, that he was going to go before him, and that he was going to prosper him where he went, right? And God was keeping his promise. And so Laban was probably scratching his head and regretting the decision that he made, and his excitement probably went away quite quickly. And so as this was going on, Jacob was busy. He was doing his job, but he was also doing whatever he could to help his odds along. And we see here something that has probably confounded a lot of people and confused people, is the thing of putting the rods in the watering troughs. Okay? And we look at that and we're like, what in the world's going on there? It says that he took, and whenever the animals were to conceive, that he would bring and he would take these rods, these sticks, and he would peel the bark off of them a little bit until the rods were speckled, thinking that the speckled rods would make speckled sheep and goats. Okay? And most people agree it was just a matter of superstition. Okay, and I tend to lean that way as well, that most likely it was a matter of superstition. Still, Jacob and Laban believed it worked. Okay, they believed it worked. There's still things that farmers do to this day, similar in nature, and it's superstition about the breeding. And so Jacob was doing this, trying to put the odds in his favor any way that he possibly can. Now, there's others that say that possibly the rods would have released a chemical of some sort, because trees do contain different chemicals and different properties and whatnot. Could have acted as an aphrodisiac, which made the sheep breed at a higher rate, the goats breed at a higher rate, increases his chances. Whether that's so or not, we don't know. I will say those guys back then are smarter than we think they were. Okay, it wasn't going to be too many generations after this they were going to be building pyramids. So, I mean, they knew what they were doing. And so it could have been a matter of superstition. There may have actually been something to it. But either way, God was the one that was prospering it, and Jacob knew that. But while God was prospering it, while God was doing this, Jacob was still doing everything he could to help it along. It gives us a great lesson as well. We can depend on God, and we can trust in God for things, but it doesn't mean that we sit on our hands. There's still things that we can do. Whenever we're trusting God to work in our lives, it doesn't mean for us to just sit back almost as if it's a fatalistic mindset of whatever happens, it's ordained of God. God's going to make it happen no matter what. No, God does expect us to work as well. He does expect us to do our part as well. And so anyway, Jacob did this. He put the rods in there. Whenever the strong and the healthy animals bred, he put the rods there. When the weak and feeble ones bred, he didn't. It's a little bit of wisdom, right? And in all of this, God blessed it anyway. And the stronger animals became Jacob's flock. The weaker ones became Laban's. And so it worked. Now, he did another thing here, that whenever they were breeding and things, somehow he set their faces toward the ring-streaked and the spotted. How you do that, I don't know, but he figured if they were facing the pasture that Laban's animals were in, that they were going to end up being like that. I don't know. So he was doing everything he could to stack the deck in his favor, okay? Jacob was a tricky guy, but he was also facing a tricky guy, Laban. And so I guess one was about as good as the other. However, in this, I don't know that necessarily I considered any kind of trickery or any kind of deceitfulness in this. It was just him being diligent, doing everything that he knew how, and in his culture and in his way of thinking, he believed that these things worked, so he did what he could. And so, regardless of whether those tricks worked, whether they had an effect or not, Jacob did all he knew how to help God building his flock. And like I said, we can learn that although God's in control, it doesn't mean we sit and do nothing. God does help us along, but we need to be diligent going about doing what we can as well. So verse 43 that says that Jacob increased exceedingly, had much cattle, maidservants and men servants, camels and asses. So in that time, he built up his herd like he was supposed to be doing, like he was planning on doing. So now he had wives, he had wealth, and then a problem came up. And so we're going to dive into chapter 31 here. I kind of breeze through it a little bit here. It's a long chapter, I'll say. I'm not going to read it all, okay? Especially tonight because I'm having trouble reading for some reason. So that could be a little bit of a break to you there. But in chapter number 31, we're going to observe several things, learn several things about Jacob, both in 31 and in the passage that we just read. I want to bring out a couple of things. But one main thing that I want us to see from this is that God is far more active and concerned and in control in the lives of his children than we often think that he is. And all through these chapters, we see God's providential hand is working in Jacob's life. We see even at the very beginning, whenever he went to the well, that it just so happened that everything was right. The right woman, the right time, everything just happened to be there. I don't think it just so happened. God had timed everything perfectly. And Jacob wasn't worried about whenever he set out. He wasn't scheduling an appointment. He didn't say, okay, I've heard that Laban's daughter comes and waters the sheep at a certain time, so I'm going to end up in Haran at that time. That's not what he was doing. It just so happened that she was there when he got there. God orchestrated that. And then on top of that, whenever he did marry the women, God was in control of when they were able to conceive, the gender that they were able to conceive, right? We find out, the Bible tells us clearly that whenever Jacob married his two wives, that God saw that Leah was unloved, was unliked, or whatever. And because of that, God opened up the womb of Leah and closed up the womb of Rachel. He was perfectly in control of when and if they were able to have children, what the gender of those children would be. God was involved in all that. You know, most of the time we just think of it being a matter of circumstances, a matter of chemistry, a matter of luck about these kind of things. But here we see that God is in control. God's definitely interested. God is definitely working in these things. We also see the appearance of the animals that were born into the flocks. God was in control of that. He could determine if a sheep was white or brown. But that's just genetics. You can't overpower science. Yes, you can. God can determine. He can make that sheep white or brown. He can make that goat black or streaked. He can do whatever he wants to do. And God was doing that for Jacob. And it was confusing Laban to death. It was aggravating him to death. He didn't like it. But God was the one that was doing this. And he took and basically spoiled all of Laban's goods, taking all of his herds and putting them into Jacob's barn, so to speak. Because God was in control of that. Look at the different aspects of your life. The things that we think is just the way that things go. Just the natural flow of things. Just coincidences that happen. God is much more involved in your life than you think he is. He's much more in control in your life. Much more interested in your life than what you think he is. Now sometimes as we're reading through scriptures like this, and I've pointed this out many times before, we're bad to think that these are special individuals. These were special circumstances, unusual, unordinary circumstances. And so God worked differently in Abraham's life or Isaac's life or Jacob's life than he does in Kevin's or Peter's or Katie's or someone else's. But that's not the case. This is illustrating for us. It's showing us clearly how God works in the lives of men. How much in control of his creation that he really is. What he can actually do for us if we'll depend on him, if we'll follow him. He can do this. And so we can learn this from this. I think, as I said, we often overlook his hand in our lives. And I believe he's always involved. He's always working for us in ways we can't see, in ways that we take for granted. And another thing that I want to see in all of this is how God guides our steps. Okay, we've talked in the past about making decisions and about finding God's will and things like that. But we see it very clearly orchestrated or illustrated, I should say, in this passage. Because God does not force us to do anything, but he does work to lead and to guide us and to influence us in the direction that he would have us to go. And so I want to point out four things in this that shows how God was guiding and directing Jacob's steps. First of all, I believe that God guides through desires. And I'll be the first to say, not all desires are of God. Okay? We can put that off of our mind right away. Not all things that you desire, not all things that, you know, cravings or whatever that you have comes from God, okay? But God does use desires. There are several scriptures to back that up. Even in the passages, I believe in Timothy, it says if any man desire the office of a bishop, he desires a good work. Talking about desire, I believe God puts a desire on a person's, in a person's heart, person's mind, toward particular ministry. I believe that's what he did with me whenever he called me into the ministry. He put a desire there. That was one of the things. Another one, it says that if we delight ourselves in the Lord, he will give us the desires of our heart. Okay? Talks about the desires. We're delighting ourselves in the Lord. The Lord is giving us the desires and the right desires. Okay? And so he guides us through desires. And so if we look at Jacob now, we found in chapter 30, verse 25, he desired to go back to Canaan. He said, Laban, it's time for me to go home. Laban says, not yet, right? But he had that desire. And it doesn't seem like it went away the whole time that he was working those 6 years. He still wanted to go back to Canaan. He was just trying to get wealth first. It was pushed aside for the sake of accumulating that wealth. Second thing that we see here is that God sometimes makes us uncomfortable. God makes us uncomfortable to guide us. Sometimes God can't lead us anywhere because we won't move our feet. So sometimes he has to make us uncomfortable where we're standing so that we'll move our feet. And that's what he did to Jacob here. Because as long as Jacob was there working for Laban and everything was going smoothly and everything was prospering, he would have stayed there until he had all the animals and Laban had none. Right? He would have stayed there until the wealth dried up, until basically he had milked him dry. However, we're going to find out in chapter 31, verse number 1 and 2 here, it says, and he heard the words of Laban's son saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. Remember how Jacob left Canaan? He left out of fear. He saw he's going to kill me. I got to get out of here. Now he's inherited and he's saying, Laban's going to kill me. I got to get out of here. He's being made uncomfortable. He's realizing that his welcome has been wore out. And because of this, he is willing to move his feet. He's willing to go back to Canaan where God wanted him at. And so, whenever his in-laws were planning on harming him, it really looked like they were going to. It made Canaan look a lot more appealing. And a lot of times God will do that in our lives. He will make our situation a little bit uncomfortable to where we're willing to accept his will. Because as long as we're content where we're at, we're not going to move. We like comfort. We're creatures of habit. But he'll make us uncomfortable. I believe it's in Deuteronomy. It talks about an eagle stirring up its nest. That's what an eagle does. I've heard this illustration before. It was a really good one. That an eagle, as long as its little chicks are staying in the nest, mama's coming, bringing food, taking care of it, they're never going to fly. They have everything they need. They're comfortable in the nest. And so what the mother eagle will do, she'll start taking the soft lining out of the nest. She'll start deconstructing it. She'll start putting thorns and briars in there and making the nest less and less comfortable to where they're willing to leave it. That's how she stirs up her nest. And God sometimes does that with us as well. The third way that we see here in this that God will guide and direct is he does it through his word. If you look at verse number 3 of chapter 31, and the Lord said unto Jacob, return to the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. Well, now that was pretty clear. That was more clear than a desire. That was more clear than a little bit of discomfort, right? God said specifically, time to leave, pack your bags, go home. And so he spoke to him through his word. And God still speaks through his word to give clarity and to show his will. Okay, he speaks through his written word, through the Bible. Also through those desires, those promptings that he does through his Holy Spirit. But he speaks to us and guides us in the direction he'd have us to go. The fourth way that we see is through counsel. If we look in chapter 31, beginning of verse number 4 down through verse 14, I'm not going to read it all for sake of time. It says, "And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock, and said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before. But the God of my fathers hath been with me. And ye know that with all my power I have served your father, and your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me." And so he goes down through and says, this is what's happened all along. This is how I've gained this wealth. I've done good all along. Your father's done evil toward me. It's time for me to go. And so he goes to his two wives here, and he says, I think it's time for us to leave. And this would have been important for him to do, because he's already had enough trouble at home. Okay, he's learned a lot of lessons here. And he doesn't want to go to his wives and say, I'm taking you away from your dad and from your brothers and from your land and your house and all the things that you've known, and moving you to a place that you're unfamiliar with. If he had just done that to them and they didn't want to go, he'd have more trouble, right? But he goes to them and he makes his case before them, and he is including them in this decision. By the way, I think this would have been unheard of in the Eastern culture at that time for a man to go to his wives for any kind of a counsel, okay? But he was. And he went to them and said, I think it's time for us to go. And guess what they said in verse 14? We're with you. We agree with you. Let's go. He says, there's nothing here for us with our dad. He hasn't treated you right. He's not treating us right. And we're definitely not going to get anything out of him. So let's go to Canaan. And so he used counsel. It's good to seek counsel, seek wise counsel, as well as consulting with those who our decisions affect. So I see there are four good principles to use whenever, or that God uses here to direct us and to guide us. And so now in chapter 31, as he overhears these conversations that he's no longer welcomed in Laban's house, they've seen that over the last 6 years that Jacob's wealth continued to increase as Laban's decreased. That didn't make anybody happy, right? Except for Jacob and his family. And so as Laban's wealth decreases, it's probably going back down to the levels it was before Jacob came. They were happy with their wealth whenever he came, but they had been increased greatly and they weren't wanting to see those levels again, okay? But Jacob had always kept his agreement. He had always done what he was supposed to do. But it was God that had done this. God had worked in Jacob's favor. And so once again, Jacob's afraid, and the Bible tells us here that he fled. It uses the word fled in chapter 31, verse number Jacob fled. So he ran away. It wasn't just that he left. It wasn't just that he decided it was time to move onward. Whenever you flee something, you're doing it out of fear. When you flee something, you're doing it for your safety. And it tells us a little bit about Laban, that Jacob would have to flee. You realize that? Jacob spent 20 years with Laban. Jacob knows Laban. He knows how Laban acts. He knows how heartless, how cruel, how vindictive he can be. Laban was not a nice man. He was not of the best character, of the best reputation. And so whenever all these things were going on, Jacob says, I've got to get out of here before Laban kills me. And so he gets Rachel and Leah on board with it. He actually calls them out to the fields. Okay? And you can read about that over the verses 1 through 14. He calls them out to the fields so as to not draw attention to himself, so as not to possibly be overheard in Laban's house, around Laban's family, and lays out all those concerns, and they all plan out, they are all on board with this, get the other wives, all the children, all the flocks, all the herds, all the servants, and they are ready for a mass exodus, so to speak, out of Laban's country, out of Laban's household here. And so in verse 17, it says that Jacob waited till Laban was shearing his sheep, and he was a good while or a good distance away, and he leaves without telling anybody. Just gathers everything together, and they just take off. This isn't necessarily a shining moment of faith and honesty in Jacob's part. You don't really think of that being the valiant thing to do, that being the most honest thing to do, to gather them all up and just leave whenever Laban is far away. But as I said, it shows you the kind of man that Laban was, because he knew that Laban would not let him leave with his wives and his wealth. He believed wholeheartedly, if I go to Laban and say, let me go, say, take off, but your wives and your flock stay with me. Yep, she was. She took after her dad. Mm-hmm. And so they gathered everything up. Rachel gets her father's images. We'll get to that in just a moment. But anyway, as he decides, if I just go to him and I just ask him about this, he's not going to let me have all my stuff, my wives, my children. I'm going to leave the same way as I came if I go to him. Now, we know that God was on his side and that God was going to be with him. God was going to protect him. And I wonder what it would have been like if he would have taken the high road and would have went to Laban and said, let us go, right? We find out later on Moses does this with Pharaoh, right? And God gets him out of there. Who knows, Laban might have had some plagues on his household. Could have happened. But I don't believe Laban would have heard him or could have heard him, as Jacob was afraid that he would. And so in verses 22 through 29, as soon as Laban hears, he quickly rounds up an army of sorts to go after them. He gets his sons, his strongest servants, he gets a pretty good posse, so to speak, and goes after Jacob and all of his herds. By the way, Jacob and all of his herds would have been slow moving. I mean, if you have a great multitude of animals, four wives, 12 children that are under 12 years old, you're not going to move very fast. And so as he's going away, headed back down to Canaan, he gets 3 days away before Laban finds out. Laban gets his group together, and on the 10th day, they catch up to him. So it took Jacob 10 days to make the journey. It took Laban and his guys 7 days. They were moving on, right? Traveling a good bit faster. And it seems that his intentions were to harm Jacob, but God intervened and warned Laban. And we see that in verse number 24 of chapter 31. And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said unto him, take heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. Verse 25, then Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mount of Gilead. And so they're back to Canaan. They made a pretty good distance. They about got back home. And so anyway, God appears to Laban at night. This is probably a new occurrence for Laban, because we find out pretty quickly Laban was a pagan. He worshipped false gods. He had false idols. He had a knowledge of the true God, kind of left over from Abraham's time. But he was still stuck with his idols that he had worshipped. And so God speaks to him, says, speak to Jacob, neither good or bad. Mind yourself what you say to him. And so as he gets there to Jacob, he catches up to him, and Laban begins painting himself as the victim. Laban paints himself as being the good guy and Jacob as being the bad guy. Essentially what he says to him, you stole away my daughters, my grandchildren, without telling me and not even letting me say goodbye. I could have thrown you a going away party, sent you out in style. But everybody knew that Laban wouldn't have done that. All right? Verse 26, Laban said to Jacob, what hast thou done, and thou hast stolen away unawares to me and carried away my daughters as captives taken with a sword? He accused him of kidnapping. You ran off like some kind of a thief. You took my daughters and my children, my grandchildren, as if you were kidnapping them, stealing them away. And he goes onward. Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me, and didst not tell me, that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with songs, with tabret and with harp? And hast not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Thou hast now done foolishly in so doing. He says, you've been a fool. You've acted like a thief, a kidnapper. You've mistreated me. You've stolen from me. I could have gave you a going away party. I could have at least kissed my daughters and my grandchildren goodbye. But you, being the horrible person you are, Jacob, didn't let me do this. Isn't it funny how people turn the tables? Turn things around, paint you out to be the bad guy. When Jacob was fleeing for his life because he knew good and well. Also, everyone who knew Laban knew this was a pack of lies. That Laban would never have sent him away with joy and mirth and tabret and harp and all these things. He wasn't going to send him a going away party. And so in verse number 29, it says, it is in the power of my hand to do you hurt. I'm the one that's been wrong. It's up to me. I could avenge myself because you've done me wrong. That's something coming from Laban with all the tricks he's done to Jacob, right? He says, it's in the power of my hand to do you hurt, but the God of your father spake to me yesternight, saying, take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. And now, though thou wouldest needs be gone, because thou sore longest after thy father's house, yet wherefore hast thou stolen my gods? So as Laban's talking to him here, he says, I have power to do you hurt. I could harm you now. I could punish you. I could avenge myself for the wrongs that you've done to me, Jacob. But your God appeared to me and told me I better not. So I'll leave you alone. I'm not going to harm you. But even though you wanted to leave, even though you were longing so much to go to your father's house, why did you take my gods? Why did you take my idols that I had with me? And so this was actually first mentioned back in verse 19. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. So we find out who stole them, right? This is the first time Jacob's heard anything about it. Laban comes and confronts him and says, it was bad enough you stole all these other things, but you also stole my idols, my gods. We kind of dealt with this a little bit before as Jacob was leaving to go to Haran to begin with. Whenever he got to Bethel and he had his vision at night, he says, surely God is in this place and I knew it not. They had the idea that God was something that could be contained to a specific place, to these idols, to these statues, that it was the God of this family, the God of this land, and different things. And so as Jacob had left Isaac and God went with him, he realized that God couldn't be contained to one place. Okay? But Laban and Rachel and all of them hadn't figured that out just yet. And so as Laban apparently took inventory of his house to see what was missing, one of the first things he checked was, what about my idols? What about my little gods, my statues that I have? And he saw that they were gone. As I said, Rachel had taken them. Jacob knew nothing about it. And so now there's a showdown between Jacob and Laban, thinking that he's been falsely accused of stealing. Bad enough that he accused him of stealing his daughter and his grandsons, considering that they were all on board with it, right? Jacob made sure and asked ahead of time. And so he now Laban comes and he starts going through every bit of Jacob's belongings. He starts just ransacking the place, tearing apart the tents, looking through everything, looking for his idols that he's accused Jacob of taking. And he goes through everything and he doesn't find it anywhere. And he finally comes to Rachel's tent. Remember, she's the one that stole them, right? And she is sitting on the saddle for her camel in her tent, using it like a chair. And she says, pardon me if I don't rise up. The custom of women is upon me. Okay, she says, it's my time of the month. I can't get up. And the idols are in the camel's furniture. It's in the saddle for the camel. And she's sitting on it. She's learned from her dad. Right? You don't spend all those years with Laban and not find some of his tricks. And so she lies to him. As far as I know, she lies to him. and she doesn't get up. They don't search what she's setting on. And they leave and they can't find the idols, the images anywhere. And so they come out and Jacob then confronts him. He lets 20 years of pent-up anger loose on Laban. Not one of Jacob's finest moments, okay? So he's been watching Laban completely ransack everything. He's had all these false accusations. He's been mistreated by Laban for 20 years. And now he's finally out of there. He's got word that God says don't touch him, right? And so he comes to Laban and he just lets loose on him. And he starts telling Laban what a scoundrel he is and how good of a worker Jacob has been and how Laban has mistreated him over and over and over and over again. And it comes to a head in verse number 42 and says, except the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou hadst sent me away now empty. God hath seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked thee yesternight. So he says, at this very moment, if it hadn't been for God, I would have nothing. And if it wasn't for God protecting me from you, you would have stolen everything from me. You make me out to be the criminal. You make me out to be the bad guy. Here, we'll just let everybody know, my family and yours. This is what happened. This is who's mistreated who. This is what I've done. I've done nothing but good to you. You've done nothing but evil to me from the time that you cheated me with your two daughters onward. And so he just lets it fly, which really is unfortunate. It's unfortunate because I believe at that time, Jacob had the opportunity. He could have been a good witness and a good testimony to his pagan father-in-law. This probably was not a good witness and testimony whenever he just flew loose in a fit of rage and told him off. Okay? I'll guarantee you there'll be plenty of times in your life that there'll be people that mistreat you and you want to tell them off. It might make you feel good for a moment. It might. I don't advise it. It's a good way to lose your testimony. And that's what Jacob has done here. He's lost any kind of testimony and influence with Laban that he may have had. And so he just, like I said, he completely flies off the handle here. But I will say one good thing from it is that he does give God the glory and the credit for all of his success. He may have had some shrewd bargaining abilities. He may have known a little bit about cattle and breeding and tending flocks and herds. He may have peeled a few branches off and put them in watering troughs. He may have done that kind of thing. But ultimately, it wasn't the peeled branches. It wasn't the watering troughs. It wasn't the direction the sheep faced in. It wasn't any of those things. It was God that prospered him. And he gives him credit there. And also in a couple more verses that I'd skipped over there in verse number 5 of chapter 31, as he's talking to his wives, he says, and said unto them, I see your father's countenance that is not toward me as before, but the God of my father hath been with me. Verse number 7, and your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. Verse number 9, thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. And so, lest we think that Jacob was as big of a scoundrel as what Laban was, or if we think that he's conceited, thinking that it was by his own craftiness that he did this, he has learned it is God that's blessing him. It is God that's doing this. It's God that's revealing it to him, okay? All the way through. And so, anyway, by the way, the verses I referenced there a minute ago, I skipped over whenever it said that God had revealed to him how to go about his breeding plan with his animals. You find that in verses 10 through 12, that God showed him the animals that he was to request and how to go about breeding them and all of that. So anyway, by the time that Jacob had given him a piece of his mind, and God had warned him not to touch him, Laban knew that he had lost. The battle was over for him. He didn't have any hope. He had done his best to try to make himself look like the victim, to try to make Jacob look bad. And so now he's going to make one last jab at Jacob, followed by an attempt to discredit and to make Jacob look bad again. And so in verses 43 through the end of the chapter, It says, Laban answered and said unto Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and these cattle are my cattle, and all that thou seest is mine. And what can I do this day unto these my daughters, or unto their children which they have borne? Now, therefore, come thou, and let us make a covenant. So he tells him, everything that you have is because of me. You would have nothing if it wasn't for me. That's what Laban's telling him. Jacob just said, if it wasn't for God, I wouldn't have any of this. Laban says, if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't have any of this. Bold words for Laban, isn't it? The funny thing is, and I didn't really touch a whole lot on the idols thing. I guess I'm a little bit scatterbrained tonight. I don't know. But anyway, the funny thing is that Laban had a vision from God. He had something revealed to him from God, and he knew it was of God. That's why he wouldn't touch Jacob, right? Not only that, he knew that it was the God of Jacob that had prospered Jacob and taken all of Laban's stuff and gave to Jacob. And although he knew that the God of Jacob was real, he still would not let go of his idols. Could you imagine having this vision and God speaking to you in the night, in the next morning, saying, where's my idols at? How hard it is for us to give up those kind of things. We can see the truth, we can hear the truth, we can understand the truth, but yet we are so ingrained oftentimes. That's one reason it's often hard to get to someone who has followed a false religion. It is hard for people to give up false religion even after they've become acquainted with the truth. They realize that what they had believed was false, but yet they have a hard time letting go of it to take hold of the truth. That's what happened to Laban. It's a sad thing how many people in the Bible heard from God and ended up in hell. I believe Laban was one of them. Can you imagine hearing the voice of God in your life and still going to hell? Laban did it, and I believe there's many others that have. Nothing else but the Holy Spirit drawing them to himself, and they reject it and say, no, I don't want it. And so anyway, that was just a kind of going back and getting into that I skipped over. But as Laban here gets this last jab and he takes credit for everything that Jacob has, he says, now come and let's make a covenant together. This is where he's trying to make Jacob look bad one more time. And as he brings this covenant about, he says, let's pile up a pile of stones here in Gilead, and we're going to make a covenant, an agreement. And in this agreement, okay, he says, you're not to pass from where you're at past this pile of rocks to do me harm, and I won't leave where I'm at to come past this pile of rocks to do you harm. This is our boundary. This is our barrier between us, and we're not going to pass over this. He also invokes a little bit of an oath here as well, saying that God is watching over you, Jacob. You've been a trickster, you've been a deceiver, and you've mistreated me, and God is watching you, and if you do anything wrong, if you come across this boundary to harm me, if you take any extra wives to yourself, if you harm any of my daughters or your grandchildren, God is watching you and he will get you. And so Laban's sounding like he's the one that's afraid. Laban's sounding like he's the one that's been the victim all along. Laban's sounding like he's the one that needs something to protect him. When all along, Jacob's just wanting out of there. Even the thing of, if you take any more wives besides my daughters, the reason that he has as many wives as he does already is Laban. He only wanted one. So all of this is ridiculous, but Laban's putting all this out here with all this big crowd, all of his servants and all of Jacob's family, making Jacob look bad. Saying, you're such a scoundrel, I've got to get some kind of a commitment or a contract to make sure that you're not going to harm me. And of course, Jacob said, yeah, no problem. I have no problem with any of that because I'm not going to come back to you. I don't want to see your face again. If I get away from you, I'm not going to harm you. I'm not going to take any more wives because I didn't want all of the ones I have now. I'm not going to mistreat your daughters because I love them and I've taken care of them all of this time. So yeah, I have no problem with your terms and your conditions there. And Jacob does go a step further here. And it says in verse number 54, then Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mount and called his brethren to eat bread. And they did eat bread and tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning, Laban rose up and kissed his sons and his daughters. and blessed them, and Laban departed and returned unto his place. This is the first time, I believe, I'd have to look a little bit harder to make sure, but I believe this is the first time it's recorded ever of Jacob making a sacrifice. Now, whenever he slept and he slept on the stone, he anointed it the next day with oil. But this is the first occurrence of a sacrifice as he's leaving Laban and he makes a sacrifice to God. He's starting a new part of his life here, a new journey, so to speak. He's going back to the God that he left, so to speak. And so he offers up his sacrifice. And one last thing will be done here. In verse 55, they say their goodbyes, and there's something that's missing in all this. Did y'all catch it as I read over that a moment ago? Something missing in the goodbyes. I don't find any warm goodbyes to Jacob, do you? Laban rises up and he kisses his daughters, he kisses his sons, which is the grandchildren, and he blessed them and departed. Jacob doesn't get a warm goodbye, does he? Now, we turn that around and we could laugh at it just because of our context and our culture. Oh, of course, Jacob didn't get a kiss. He did whenever he arrived. Remember whenever Laban went out and met him and embraced him and kissed him and all these things? He's not doing it now. They might be able to make their little contract, their little covenant. They offer up their sacrifice and all this. But it looks to me like Laban is pretty upset at Jacob, and he's still not willing to shake his hand, still not willing to give him a goodbye kiss. He's still not willing to be civil toward him in a culture where that would have been just absolutely rude to part ways without any kind of a gesture or greeting. Okay? And so anyway, Jacob is done with Laban. He's graduated from the school of hard knocks. He has learned from the master. Right? Everything that he had dished out before, all the seed that he had sown, he reaped. And so now he's headed back, and next week we're going to see he meets with God once again. He met with him as he was leaving. He's going to meet with him coming back. And then we have something very interesting that Jacob's probably not looking forward to. If you remember 20 years earlier, the reason that Jacob left was because he had a brother that wanted to kill him, and he hasn't talked to him since. So there's going to be a nervous reunion coming up. And that's what we've got in the next couple of weeks. So does anyone have any questions or comments or anything to go along with this? You look like you're thinking something.
I'm just thinking of 7 years for a child. That's not too bad. You're getting 7 years for your labor. Coming.
You think it'll work? Okay, so let's go to the Lord in prayer, and we'll be done for the night. Dear Lord, we come to you today. Thank you for your blessings. Lord, we do thank you for this time in your word. I pray, Lord, that it's been a help and encouragement. Lord, we're so thankful for the way that we can see that you're involved and interested in our lives, Lord, and Lord, that you're much more in control than what we give you credit for. Lord, just help us to trust and depend upon you in everything. And Lord, just to allow you to work things together. Lord, I pray that you would be with us throughout this week. I just pray that you go before us and guide and direct our steps, Lord. Pray, Lord, that you would be at these prayer requests that were lifted up earlier in service, Lord. Lord, we thank you so much for all you do and all these things I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.